Hey kids, you are listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and this show is Fish Out of Agua with Michelle Carlo. Today is Tuesday, July 18th, 2017, and we have a lot of show for you here today. It's midsummer, and it's really hot out outside, and we wanted to open with one of the hot songs from our childhood. So here we are with the Psychedelic Shack. That's where it's at. Woo! Yeah, music so hot, you can't get over it. Music so low, you can't get under it. Psychedelic Shack by The Temptations in 1970 from their album by the same name. I remember coming home from the beach, riding, falling asleep, sand encrusted, and just like totally tired and ice cream and meat drunk in my uncle's old VW 1968 bus. Oh my God, so long ago. But like, I remember riding with my cousins and like sleeping and listening to my relatives, listening to WABC music radio, where you would hear music of every single genre. These were the songs of my childhood. I was a child in the 60s. I was not a child of the 60s. There's a difference. And if you don't know it, you should go wiki that shit, yo. I mean, I was pretty much young all through the 1970s also. I consider that like my 60s, 70s, whatever. But I guess it's a really relatively similar thing. I mean, what are kids listening to today, the children of today, when they're riding home from the beach? If their parents are listening to the radio, which who knows, maybe they are. They're listening to Rihanna and Jay-Z and Queen Bey and Bruno Mars and Katy Perry and Adele. And I guess it's just, you know, the songs that you remember when you were a child are the ones that you love and stick with you your entire life. I think I'm going to play another summer song from when I was sunburned and sand encrusted and sleeping in the back of whatever vehicle was probably overstuffed, driving on Bronx parkways and upstate and careening around. No, everybody drove safe. But we did have that little bobblehead. Here's a song from what stereotypically Latin people used to always listen to, and sometimes we did. That was Santana with I Hope You're Feeling Better from their Abraxas album in 1970. And I think I'm going to make it a trifecta of childhood songs here with this one from Marvin Gaye, What's Going On, from the album of the same name in 1970. And even though this song was recorded, oh my God, like 47 years ago, it still resonates today because people can ask the exact same question. Why are we asking the same questions about life and politics and New York City and unrest and people? Well, anyway, let the song take you there.
there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see, oh, what's going on. Oh, but who are they to judge us simply 'cause our hair is long? Oh, you know that we've got to find a way, bring some understanding here today. Oh, 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 picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me. Can't see what's going on. What's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on. Right, right on. Right on.
You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and this show is Fish Out of Agua. We have a lot of fantastic show for you today. We are going to, this is a person that I know from Latin theater, and she has just like broken out in a big way, and I'm so excited to bring her to you. But first, I want to intro her with a song that she handpicked from this episode, and it's from Bjork, and it's called Human Behavior.
I'm not afraid to
And we're back with Fish Out of Agua on Radio Free Brooklyn. I love that I'm having my guest artists pick their intro and outro songs for each episode. It reminds me of songs I'd forgotten about, like this song from Bjork's debut album in 1993, released in June of that year, so it's a summer song. And now it is time for my favorite part of the show. I bet you can guess what that is. Hold it, hold it. Listen. And welcome to Fish Out of Agua's Guest Artist of the Week. Woo! I just love saying that every week. I don't know why. I don't have to repeat it because I'm prefacing it during the show. But I'm sitting here today with one of my most favorite people ever. And yes, I know everyone is my favorite. That's just because everybody is my favorite. This woman and I go back to the 20th century. From doing performance art and Latin theater and comedy to what we're doing today. And...
Rina Valentin!
Yay, Rina! How are you, Rina?
Oh my goodness, it's so awesome to be down here with you, Michelle.
Yeah, we are having fun. We're scaring the studio after hours in Fashion Land. So, my God, like when I was asking you, like, how did we meet? Did we ever figure it out? Was it Linda Nieves Powell's play A Date with My Dead Husband Hector, or was it around that? It was around that time. It was back in the 20th century. I know we worked with her a lot.
You and I, we did work with her a lot, but you and I did stuff independently because you were also in Barriolesque. We did stuff at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe. You had your hat character.
Carmen Mofongo.
Carmen Mofongo.
The one and only Latin lady with stuff on her head.
Who had the most amazing headgear. It was just fascinating to see what she was going to wear. And so I can't really recall if it was prior to working together on projects with Linda or just you and I running into each other in the performance art scene.
Yeah, there were a lot of events going on at the Theater for the New City, at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe. There was La Teia. And
yeah.
Also, Charas La Bohio. There was stuff going on there. There was stuff going on all over. Charas El Bohio was, now I think it's condos, but it was a school that was behind the Cristadora condo by Thompson Square Park in the East Village. And I think the Cristadora was famous because I think Iggy Pop lived there at one point.
Yeah, you know, and interesting enough, the Loisada Festival was just celebrated this past weekend.
Yes.
And all of these venues you mentioned are pretty much in that same area or within that geographic designation. That was kind of our theater world at the time, and it's interesting because I just found it to be a lot more active than what it is now.
Is it?
Well, I'm not saying that it isn't active. I just feel our style of performance was more active back then because I consider us performance art.
Yes.
Performance art style, avant-garde, kind of like,
that's,
you know,
how we started out, for sure. And I remember hearing something on, I think it was New York One. They did a seg. I think it was New York One. They did a segment about the Lower East Side Festival, and I was like, I had it on periphery, you know, I was doing something else. And I thought I heard them say that they were trying to get back to the New Eurekan roots of the community because they had been having attendance going down in the past couple of years. And I remember there was a large period of time from the late 1990s to like the mid 2000s where I was doing stuff with them like a couple of times a year. As were you.
Right. Yeah, no, I was down with it. I mean, you know, of course, my situation becoming a mom shifted a lot of things and limited my commitments because of time.
Well, of course.
And you know, when it comes to theater, while it looks easy and I would like to consider our performance flawless, it requires a lot of rehearsal.
A lot.
That's a really, really big time commitment that, as a mom right now, is a little challenging for me to... implement into my schedule. But that's not to say that I don't still do it.
I think that you have one of the most interesting trajectories in a career I have ever seen. Like, and I've seen, believe me, trust me, honey, I've seen a lot. But you, I've seen you be everything from a performance art spoken word poet, and now you've become a mom, and now you're like this media conglomerate. And what I, and I'm sure our fish out of agua listeners really want to know is, how did you begin on this path? And like, just tell us about it. We want to know everything, starting from where you were born. You don't have to tell us the year.
Thank you, because, you know, I'll deny it's all.
Of course. As well you should.
So I'm born and raised in El Barrio, New York. My family basically was in a radius of like 118 and 119. And what I mean by that is like my family owned a grocery store on 118 between 3rd and 2nd. They owned a social club between 118, 3rd and 2nd. And so my grandmother lived in a brownstone that was a like six stories up, and she lived on the sixth floor, of course, that was on 3rd Avenue. And then we lived in the building next to hers around the corner on 119. And then my aunts lived in the building next to her. And then my other cousins and aunts lived around the corner. So we were like all around each other.
Oh my God, you guys are like a little village.
Yeah.
So
in El Barrio.
So who was the first one to come from PR?
Well, that would be my grandparents.
So, and what town did they come from?
Santurce and San Jose. So wow. My mom's side is from Santurce and my dad's side was from San
Jose.
So
it's like the both or a large number of both families like ended up on the same block?
Well, El Barrio was
that's pretty, what it is.
Yeah. It was predominantly
Because my family
Puerto
was
Rican.
Like that too. Yes.
Yeah. And yeah. So everybody knew each other. I know my grandmother came over on the Marine Tiger. My grandfather used to love to talk about that. My grandfather's German, though. Huh. Interesting is that, but what's interesting is that he was German in Puerto Rico.
Oh yeah.
And so she came over on the Marine Tiger. And he used to always say to him when he would share the story of her floating over on the Marine Tiger.
Floating
yeah,
over.
Yeah, well, because he would float. She would float, and he would say, "My pineapple." He would refer to
La piña,
yeah,
mi piñita, o mi piñón. So for those people that might not know what the Marine Tiger is, the Marine Tiger was a boat that basically was like the IRT Express. It went back and forth from Puerto Rico to New York, I guess shortly after World War II until the early 1960s. I mean, someone could correct me on the history, but I believe that it was like about 15 years of going back and forth with the primary exodus being in the 1950s. And some people... I know, like my dad's family says that they're Mayflower Puerto Rican because they came here in 1928.
Right.
Like, some people would look askance at Marine Tiger. They would say, like, oh, esta un Marine Tiger. Like, what does that mean? What does that mean? So she came here 15 years after you did, but, you know, everybody has to have something to put somebody down with.
That's unfortunate.
That was it, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is unfortunate, and it's an unfortunate characteristic within our community that I wish would come to a halt at some point.
Yes.
You know, I'm hopeful. Yeah. I'm hopeful.
But you can make a joke out of it. But
yeah,
which,
well,
you know.
I did. I actually, we have a skit that's going to be presented on my new show called Crabs in a Barrel. But
Crabs in a Barrel.
Yeah.
Carangrejo.
Getting
back to grandma and Marine Tiger and German grandpa.
Yeah. And so, but the interesting thing is that my mom's parents lived on 122nd Street and my dad's parents lived on 118th Street. So they were all within walking distance. So my whole lifespan of growing up as a child was from like 118 to like 122nd, because I was being, you know, tossed back and forth between grandparents on the weekends, because, you know, back in the day the parents wanted the weekends to themselves.
Yes. So. And did you always know you were going to be a performer?
I think so. I mean, I had I want to say at least 20 cousins, and within those cousins there were a lot of us were in the same age bracket. And based on that, we would put on these family productions. And so we would have one categorized as a singer, others as a dancer, others that were just comedic. And, you know, we would put on full-fledged productions and sing with, like, brushes in our hands, mocking, of course, a microphone. So If I had to say, if I knew if I was going to be a performer, it's something we did all the time.
That's so
as
cool.
As a family.
That is so cool.
We used to put on productions for our family.
I love it. Yeah. Like, let's put on a show.
Yeah, no, and this has been every family gathering. We would huddle up.
Wow.
Whatever cousins were there, and we would go to the room, and then we would put a whole production together.
Who was the main protagonist? Was it you even then?
Well, I remember when I was young, I used to do imitations of Edith Chacon.
Oh, my God. Edith Chacon. And I guess I could see why there's a resemblance. You can't.
Yeah.
If you know who Edith Chacon is, you could figure it out. My fundillo.
And so, but then they would, it started getting salty when they would make us do talent shows and it became a competition. And then I had cousins that were really good singers and they would always end up winning. And it became this competitive thing. And that's when it got ugly. And then I didn't want to do it anymore.
Oh.
But yeah. But I don't necessarily know if I knew then that I was going to be a performer, although I was pretty much in every production in school throughout all my school years.
Wow. So what high school did you go to?
I went to Norman Thomas.
You went to Norman Thomas. See,
yeah.
I don't know why I thought you went to the Fame School all these years.
I tried out for it.
She acts like she went to Fame. She acts like she's Fame.
But I was always in every talent show. Wow. So, you know, I've been a performer all my life.
What about in college?
No, I didn't finish college.
Really?
Yeah, can you believe that?
For some reason, I thought you had a master's, too.
I know. I should have a master's.
You have a life experience master's.
Well, hopefully somebody will honor me with an honorarium. But I might as well have a master's because I did 3 years in a conservatory. So
wow.
It's pretty much the same thing. It's just, if anything, I want to say I started in college and the academic aspect of it wasn't really, didn't hold my attention. I needed to be free, as a matter of speaking, and so I shifted over to just exploring, and I wanted to travel, so I went to a trade school, and I studied travel and the world. And,
wow. And that was in the days where they had, like, actual travel agents that you would go to set up the trips that civilian people couldn't set up themselves.
That's exactly what I became.
And you became a performer.
Well, I always performed on the side.
Okay.
But I didn't really catch the bug until I transferred to our L.A. office.
Wow. Yeah. So did you do, like, regular acting out there?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, like with the headshots and the trying to get the agent and the showcases?
Yeah.
And
yeah, so here, at that time, I had attended Strasbourg. I did a little bit of Lee Strasberg training, which was method.
Wow.
I may not have been in the right class. I don't know. But for whatever reason, method wasn't my direction. And then I studied at HB Studios. I've always done training. I've always been a trainer.
Now I see how you had such a strong foundation for your comedy, because I've almost always seen you in a comedic light.
You know, I kind of have, like, my family also is speaks the language of sarcasm. So there's always it's humorous. Like, that's our style of communication. So if you didn't have a thick bone, you know, I don't know what to tell you, because in my family, that was the language.
So let me ask you this. What was the first performance that you would say that you did in New York City that, like, set you on the path to where you became now? Do you remember what that was? Me, what it was. It was when I first debuted the Carmen Mofongo character at Surf Reality in some random day in the early winter of 1997. I remember that.
I want to say, and mind you, I had done other performances prior to that, but that one stuck with me, and that one got a lot of play. And
it was a monologue. It was a comedic monologue.
Yeah, it was a comedic monologue. But what I had wanted to say, right, just going back to my background in education, because I would like to consider my style of development alternative, because I want to make sure that people are encouraged to always study and be a student of life. Because while I didn't finish college, and maybe I will someday, maybe I won't, you know, I don't know, but I've always pursued just learning something, whether it's taking a course here or taking a course there. And so after I did HB Studios, I went back to, I relocated, I picked up all my stuff and relocated my entire life to California. And when I went out to California, of course, I did some more training, but I was auditioning. But I also happened to be living with my mom's high school buddy who played the mom on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Really?
Yeah.
And oh, so, my God.
I know.
That was such a popular show.
It was a popular show.
Will Smith and everything.
Yes, Will Smith and everything. And so I was living with her when I first moved out there.
I thought you were going to say you were living with Will Smith.
No, oh, man, that would have been the life.
Sorry, Jada.
I know. That would have been the life. But she wasn't with him then anyway.
Okay, so yeah, not sorry, Jada.
I was over there when Tyra Banks was also becoming known because she played his girlfriend in an episode.
That's right.
She's a basketball player.
Okay, so we're going to date ourselves. So this is the early 90s.
Yeah. And so I would I went out there to pursue acting, but my career as an account manager for this corporate travel company also had a location in Beverly Hills. So I transferred lovely, you know, like my location was in Beverly Hills. I resided in West Hollywood. I was accommodated in San Fernando Valley by her name was Renee Watson Johnson, and she was the woman who played his mom, not the one who played his aunt, the one who played his mom that would come in and visit from Philly. And she accommodated me for quite some time, and she also opened up doors for me, and she got me on the show, and I was just an extra on the show. But then I became a featured extra, and slowly but surely I was making my way into the show. And I got, California was hit with a really big earthquake. The one thing that saved everybody was that it was first thing in the morning. It was like really, it was practically, it was still dark outside. But again, what saved it was that it was Martin Luther King holiday, which meant that not too many people were out and about, because California, or especially LA, it's an early state. Like everybody wakes up super early and runs super early, but this particular day, it was a holiday, which saved a lot of people. I'd like to say, because there was a highway that collapsed. I had never experienced an earthquake ever before in my life, so I was, forget about it. It was horrendous. It was like a wrath of God is what it felt like. It was like a wrath of God, and so we had gone through that earthquake, and I had one of my friends who's, I guess, experienced them come kind of get me through it. And then we were dealing with aftershocks every day. Then we had another earthquake. And just so you know, the only difference between an aftershock and an earthquake is the amount of time it lasts. But it can be just as high on the Richter scale.
Wow.
That is the difference between an earthquake and an aftershock. So we had aftershocks that were pretty high.
So just as intense as the actual earthquake, only it just didn't last as long.
Correct. So
that's crazy.
And this was on a regular basis. And so for like weeks, the ground was rumbling. And so if you were lying parallel,
I would have been on the plane the next day.
Listen,
I would have been
I didn't last very long.
No.
And I couldn't take it. I couldn't deal with it.
I'll take my luck with the ocean.
Yeah, So, and that's exactly what I did. I packed up my stuff and I relocated to Florida because it was
Florida.
Yeah, I know. I went from hurricanes. I went from earthquakes to hurricanes.
Are you going
to
tell me that Hurricane Andrew hit?
I went right before Andrew. Unbelievable.
Oh, no.
No, I went, no, excuse me. I went right after Andrew. Right after Andrew. And it was just unbelievable. My acting career went, because there's really no acting
in Florida.
Yeah, there's no, there's more, it's a model's town. And I tried to pursue that a little bit, but I was living in Fort Lauderdale. And everything was really happening in Miami. But eventually that kind of wore thin on me, and I made my way back to New York after having moved back to California. I went back to California again, and then I came back to New York because my grandmother wasn't doing well. Stayed with her, and because I was staying with her, I went back to school, but this time I went to William Esper, which is just as just like college, you know.
Except without the degree,
right? Exactly.
But it's totally the equivalent, though.
Pretty much. And I studied a specific technique, which is Meisner, And I studied.
So it's good. So yeah. you reinvented yourself yet again.
Yes.
And then you did comedy.
Yeah. Well, I always had comedy in my blood. Like, for some reason, I just, you know, it didn't matter what I was doing. Somehow, my delivery was always comical.
Yeah, people laugh at you.
Yeah.
And I mean that in only the best kind of way.
I will say there was one time that I did this play called Kinkoho. It was urban version or urban translation of the Greek mythology Oedipus Rex.
Mm.
And I was the messenger that came out and gave, I had a monologue, and I was giving the description of what was occurring. And I never forget that. It was like a real serious moment, and I was crying, and somebody laughed. And I said, wow, I can't even deliver something serious.
That, you know, that happened to me in an audition. I was doing something that was supposed to be serious, and everybody started laughing, and I just, like, felt like an idiot. It just makes you feel bad, because you don't know.
Well, it wasn't, the thing was my intention was by no means to make it, a light situation in my delivery, or definitely not comically, but... somehow I came across that way. Regardless,
you were naturally humorous and funny, and that's the arena that I know. We've made a lot of people laugh over the years.
Yeah,
we did this show with Linda Nieves Powell called Soul Latina for
a few years.
We went around to different colleges and we made a ton of people laugh. We did the Batty OLS shows at the New Eurekan. We made a ton of people laugh, and then. When Fish Out of Agua came out, I realized that you had reinvented yourself yet again. Are you like a Scorpio or like a phoenix bird or something?
I like that you say phoenix, because I do feel that I have been reborn as a phoenix from a spiritual sense, only because, you know, the phoenix burns and then it rises.
Yeah, because then you were a media host at Bronx Open.
I'm still a media host.
Yes, and you're still there, right. Yeah. But, I mean, this is like, you know, going back like seven, eight years ago.
I've been on... Open going on 11 years
now.
Wow.
So how did that start? And what's the channel again, so we can let people know?
So Open airs on BronxNet's channel, Cablevision 67 and Verizon 33. It does live stream as well on BronxNet.org. I host the Open Friday version of Open. Open has three different hosts. I am the arts, culture, entertainment, women empowerment, youth development theme, which is every Friday live at 10 a.m. And I've been doing it for 11 years now.
It's an amazing show. I'm saying it because I've been on it like five times. But
yeah, well, I actually enjoy having the ability to re-invite my friends and document everyone's development. And that's what I think that's what allowed me to commit to it.
And part of this is like me reciprocating, you know, for all the kindness you've shown me. I wanted you to be, you always are showcasing other people, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to showcase yourself.
I appreciate that.
And now you're doing it again, because you're doing something with MNN in Spanish Harlem. Tell us a little bit about that. It's called Colors of Rena.
Yeah, so I really appreciate what you just said, Michelle, because... in some form, in some aspect, I felt like there was a need for somebody to be a venue or a space for us to be documented, and I took on that responsibility because nobody else.
No,
nobody
is telling our stories. No one is giving Latinos the place to blossom and show what they have. You know, like there's BET, there's Black Entertainment. You know, television, but where's PRT or LET?
But in English.
And that's
always been my stance.
And I know Me Too is doing videos, and I know there were people, Remezcla, I know there were other people doing stuff, but there's not like one place.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
it's like,
right.
like own, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
So I figured,
well,
you know,
we're crossing our fingers that I will be able to establish that in on this journey, because... I kind of surrendered to this commitment of having this opportunity for all of us.
Yeah, not just Puerto Rico. Let's be clear.
For all of us, the Latino
nation.
All of us is artists because artists of color.
Yes.
Because I like saying and I like making it clear that I represent the urban community, and I was raised in a mixed environment, and while I am pro-Latina and I am pro-Puerto Rican, I'm third generation, so I'm Americanized in a way that really my first culture is urban culture. You know, one of my closest friends is Chinese, the other one's Japanese, you know, my other one's African-American, I have another Indian one, but it's just really, it's not even about their races, it's about that there's this magic that New York has.
This wonderful energy that we need to preserve and not dilute.
First and foremost, I will say, once I start, I was able to have influence in who was going to be seen on my show, you know, because that took some time. I wasn't exactly the one booking the show and so forth. And then after a while, they started kind of giving me some influence in deciding who's going to be on. You know, as I continued doing it, people were coming directly to me, and then I say it to people all the time, it's like, it's wonderful for me to have an artist on who's not a Grammy winner, and then they'll come back a year later and they're a Grammy winner, and they still
come
back.
That's amazing. It's like you're part, it's like you become part and parcel of like what they become, and it's so gratifying to like, it must be, I haven't experienced that yet.
It is.
Like, to be like,
I've been doing it 11 years.
Yeah.
And it's okay if I know I helped them. I know that even though this is my reach, right, because I'm predominantly a Bronx audience, but we're online too, so technically we're worldwide.
And there's people watching.
Right. And also, I've been doing it so long, I have a consistency. I have a following that is loyal to me.
Yes.
Because they've been watching me for so many years. And I really, really enjoy discovering. So I got that aspect of who I am. But then once I became a mom in 2008, I was pregnant. I gave birth to my beautiful darling gift, Charmvita, in July.
Who's sitting on the couch giving her the side eye saying, it's about time mommy mentioned me.
Wave to the radio, Charm.
I'm keeping that in.
It's a good one. It's a good one because she did. And she said, hi.
Yeah.
So, you know, that hi came with a wave, in case you guys were wondering. And so I knew at that moment, after having been on air already all those years prior to getting pregnant, I decided that television was going to be my platform. Because I was brought into it, like it was kind of handed to me on a platter, you know, like I was discovered at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe by the executive director of BronxNet Television. He gave me this opportunity of a pilot show, and I was there to shoot a pilot, and then I ended up being part of the show and its growth throughout all these years. And, you know, I said to him, this is it. I think I'm just going to make this my business. And while I did not become a technician per se, meaning like dealing with the actual camera, editing, and all of that, I'm very knowledgeable of all of it, and obviously I know the language, having been around it so
she knows
years.
Lighting like Marlene Dietrich, trust me. You know what happened with you? It was like kind of like when preparation meets opportunity.
Right.
And that's just amazing that like you spoke with such passion before, and I think we want to hear a little bit of the passion from your performance art, like around the time that you got discovered at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe. Do you have a little piece?
I want to recite this cute,
sure,
sweet little piece, because I think it serves where we are right now in humanity, and it's actually an untitled piece, and it's published in an anthology of 52 Puerto Rican women writers called Breaking Grounds.
Mm, I think I've heard of it.
And it's really short and sweet, but I think it will serve a really nice, profound message to anyone or for anyone who is feeling the love of finding differences and similarities. And it goes, the world is a big place. Don't hate. Embrace the unity of diversity. Different cultures, different languages. To learn, go to books, to educate. But it is your state of mind determining how far or low you go. Life has a lot of fork roads. 3 is the magic number, keeper of the door. opens or shuts. Fill the well with knowledge, people, places, and things influence who you become from young to old. We are all one with the same purpose, contributing, making a better place of existence, flowing with love.
I wish you could have seen that passionate face that I'm seeing right now. Rena, in closing, I want to just have you shout out real quick where people can see and hear your fabulousness.
Well, Colors of Rena, mm-hmm. which is the new show, which yes. we didn't really get to talk about, it's airing on Manhattan Neighborhood Networks Thursdays, 9 p.m. And also you can follow me at Colors of Rena, and or you can follow me on Rena Valentine, but my name is spelled R-H-I-N-A, kind of like the Rhine River, except it's with an A, Rena. I am all over. I'm on Facebook, Twitter,
Instagram.
I do Instastory, Snapchat. I'm forever young, living.
You are forever young. Maybe you all act our daughter's shoe sizes.
Oh, I love Seven. That. Our daughter's shoe sizes.
Well,
my daughter's
daughter.
Shoe size
I don't
is
have
four
a daughter.
And a half. Well, my daughter's shoe size is 4.5. I'm like, maybe I'll just stick to my shoe size. 7.
Thank you so much for being on the show. Kiss on the air.
Under the glow of the very bright lights, I turn my face towards the warm night sky, and I am not afraid of a thousand eyes when they're above 500 smiles.
And we're back with Fish Out of Agua on Radio Free Brooklyn. That song was called Opportunity, sung by Sia from the Annie soundtrack. It was also picked by Rena for this episode because it's a song that's close to her heart, and it's what she believes in, opportunity. Once again, Rena Valentin is very busy. Her show, Open, is every Friday at 10 a.m. on BronxNet, Cablevision Channel 67, or Verizon Channel 33, or live streamed on BronxNet.org. And you can also catch on MNN, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, Colors of Rena, which airs bi-weekly every other Thursday on Spectrum, Channel 34 and 1995, and Fios on Channel 33. That's every other Thursday bi-weekly, Colors of Rena, Rena Valentin's new variety show. And guess what, kids? That's our show! Woohoo! Well, if you like what you've heard today or any other day, why not consider sponsoring us? Yes, you can sponsor Fish Out of Agua with Michelle Carlo or any other of the fine shows on Radio Free Brooklyn quite easily. All you need to do is go to the RadioFreeBrooklyn.com homepage, look for the Donate tab, pull it down, and follow the directions. It's that easy. And did you know that you can sponsor any of the shows, including Fish Out of Agua with Michelle Carlo, for as little as $1 per episode? Think of all the entertainment you got for $1 today, okay? Like a dollar's worth of bazooka candy or candy from Economy Candy on Rivington Street, which is one of the few old school places that are left. Oh my God, as we speak, Cup and Saucer just closed. It was like a, I guess what you would call a greasy spoon diner on Canal and Eldridge, but it had been there for 70 years. Can you imagine? They paid rent for 70 years and all they did was buy equity into that building for someone else and then they got thrown out. I heard, and my memory could be faulty, the rent was about $8,000 a month, and they basically doubled it, so they had to go. And such is the way with Manhattan these days, and I'm sure a lot of other places. Well, stay tuned for Brooklyn bands. Well, not just like, well, but what can I do? There's nothing I can do today, Tuesday, July 17, 2017. I might come up with a solution next week, but as for now, we're just going to say, stay tuned for Brooklyn Bandstand next, and we are going to leave you with another song that Rena picked for this episode, and it's a song that I also love. It's part of, I guess, both of our well-spent youth. It was originally recorded by the R&B group The OJs, but it found fame with reggae band Third World in 1978. From their Journey to Addis album. Now that we found love, what are we gonna do with it? All right, I'm gonna stop singing. Let them do it. See you next week, kids. Woohoo! Happy summer.
I say, come on, baby, when the music's playing, I wanna see you.